Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Thrive at EDU podcast. I'm your host, Rochelle Danae Poth. Super excited to have this episode today because, you might guess, I actually have a guest with me to have a conversation today. So if you've been listening, you know that it hasn't always been that way. Have been looking forward to talking to my guest today because there are a lot of things that I want to learn from my guest. And I've been checking out the book, one of the books of my guests, and we're going to have a great conversation. So first, I would like to extend a warm welcome to my guest, Jenny Hubanks.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am a mom of two, and my husband and I live in Arkansas in the bougie northwest corner of Arkansas, and a lot of fun stuff to do here. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to have you. And I know that we will figure out all the things that you do because we were talking a little bit before our actual recording here about how busy and the things that are occupying our time. And I know that looking at your background and your experiences, you've been involved in education in a lot of different spaces and you are continuing to make an impact. And so before we dive into all the things we're going to talk about today, for anybody who wants to know more about you, like, if you had to sum up what got you to where you are today, because you have different roles, you're engaged in different communities and have a lot of background in education in varying areas. So if somebody said, hey, because I had a student ask me, how did you end up a Spanish teacher? And I said, well, that's a really long story, a lot of paths. But what about you? What got you to where you are today?
I would say there was one student that really was the catalyst for pushing me in the direction of special education and specifically autism, which is a large portion of my experience. So that one student lit the fire and it's taken different paths. Like you said, I've kind of have my hand in a few different things, but just that one guy. Really enjoy teaching him.
Yeah. And it makes such a difference because I know that for myself, I had written a book about like a true story, that one kid, like lessons that we learn from kids and kids that make a difference in our lives, and got stories from other educators. And just, you don't necessarily realize the impact that we want to make an impact on students, of course, but you don't necessarily realize sometimes how much you learn from students, whether the experiences are like good or bad or anything in between, there's always a lesson to be learned in something. And so for a student to have an impact on you, that's huge. And so I can understand now with that student, how you got to where you are today. And it inspired you to do a lot of different things in the special education space, which I've been doing my homework and checking it out. But you also have something that you launched related to this. Right? Maven Learning Innovations?
Yes. Yeah. So a little bit about Maven. I have held several positions over the last few years, some in behavior analysis, some in education. I wasn't really happy in either, but I love both. And I guess I kind of wanted to do things on my terms. And make sure that what I was doing, I felt good about when I went home and that I was happy with the quality of services that were provided to the student or client, depending on which setting that you were in. But yeah, kind of set that up. And then right now I'm doing so many different things. Some days I'm in a school setting and I'm working with kids that have behavior needs. Some days I'm working in self-contained classrooms, coaching paraprofessionals and teachers. Some days I am at home working in my office. One day is never the same as another.
Yeah. So I guess I can't say what does your typical day looks like because there is no typical day, which
there is
I think,
no.
I think people often ask that too, because with education, I think for a long period of time, I mean, a lot of things have been consistent, but things have changed so much over the last couple of years. And as many years as I've been in education, which we're not going to talk about that on this episode, because it's all about you and your experience. but people tend to think that it gets easier with the more years that you're involved in it. And it, I mean, in some regards, I guess it can, but really, if you're doing it right, it really doesn't get easier. I think we get a little bit wiser in how we handle some things potentially. So the typical day, I don't know that there is really a typical day in the life of an educator, especially not one who, like you, are involved in so many different things. And so one other thing that I wanted to ask you about that we'll share a lot, and I have it here, but nobody can really see it right now, but I'm actually holding your book that when I got it, I loved so much about it. And I don't want to just talk about it all myself because I want to hear from you, but it's entitled Thrive, Special Needs Strategies That Work. And so when I look at it, I always, people say, don't judge a book by its cover, but I always do. And then I look at the back and it's very, you know, visually engaging and inviting. And when I went through it, I really loved it. And so can you share with everybody who's listening, you know, what inspired you to write this book, you know, and how can families and educators use the book so that it's really effective in their practice in the classroom and also in supporting students at home?
Okay. Enjoy telling the story about how I came to write this book. I had a friend who had suggested that I write a book several years ago, and I was like, I don't know about that. I don't know that I have enough to say to put in a book that people will want to look at and read. And my parents ended up having some foster children at their house, and one of them ended up homeschooling, and she was really having a hard time finding strategies to use with him for some behavior issues. And she would call me and say, well, here's what's happening. What should I do? And I would say, well, I, as a behavior analyst, we like to observe things and watch things before we make suggestions. And so it was always general because I couldn't see what was happening. And so I would say, well, I would try this first and see how that goes. And so she would try it and she would call back and she would say, that really worked. What about this? And so as a child, at least in my case, my parents are both people I highly regard and consider them to be some of the smartest people that I know. And for my mom to not know how to use some of these strategies that I consider basic, just because I've been in the field for so long, it really changed my perspective. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I should share some things that would be easy strategies and tips to get people going, because my book is really about like how to get started. And it can be used. We actually have a lot of teachers that are purchasing it and using those strategies in the classroom. Visual supports. I think I said I wanted to talk about my favorite strategy. I'm going to go ahead and tip that off. It is visual supports. And a lot of the strategies fall underneath the category of visual supports. They're evidence-based. They're a universal design for learning component. They are considered part of high leverage practices. They have so much research behind them and they're so powerful. And they're good for all students, not only students with special needs. That's my first question to everyone. What kind of visuals do you have in place? So those can be used at home or at school. And there's really no limitation to what kind of visuals you can have to support a child or even adults. And these strategies could work for, depending on their learner's needs, middle school, some high school. But there's really, the sky's the limit with visual supports.
Yeah. And I love when I got the book and I just, you know, I opened the package and I was flipping through it. And what really struck me at first, because I flipped it over to the back of the cover to read, and then I started to go from the back to the front. And I couldn't believe, I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many things. And people need to pick this book up because you think about the amount of time that it takes to create things. And that is a big thing. I mean, for educators, there's never enough time to do all the things that you need to do. And it really does. And people listening can believe me when I say it really does make it easier. And these visuals in here, all of the different activities, there are, I don't even know how many pages. There are a lot of pages of them and they're ready to go, ready to use. And I don't know, it's amazing. And I'm sure it took a really long time to put all this together as well.
I was I had the idea, like all through the book, I say use cardstock, use cardstock, use lamination, because cardstock really makes your visuals last longer. I was blown away when I got a copy of the book and the visuals in the back were cardstock. I was just so happy with how it all turned out. They did such a great job designing those back pages and making sure that they're ready to go. You cut them out, you laminate them, and you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. I worked on visuals for a classroom yesterday from probably 6:30 to 12:30 this morning. So like, you're not kidding. It takes a ton of time to make those from ground zero. And so you're right. It's a huge deal.
You've done the work. It's already ready to go. And I love that you can just laminate them. And there are really some awesome, I mean, there's different activity tokens and long tokens and just charts and behavior trackers and task analysis. I could keep going on and on, but I don't want to spoil it because I want people to go and pick up a copy for themselves. But it's really nice that you do have that resource and your passion in it too. Mm-hmm. And one other thing that I wanted to go back to, because I love having guests because I'm having a conversation with somebody besides myself, but also whenever I really can, something that you say really resonates with me because somebody said the same thing to me about writing a book years ago. And my response and reaction to it was the exact same as yours. But then I thought about like, what are some of the things that I'm doing and like, how can you help others? And that is the key component of this is you have this book and for, especially for a teacher who's just getting started and really doesn't know where to begin, having something like this makes it so much easier, especially in this area of work that we're all doing in education. Having extra support is wonderful. And I know you gave us your favorite strategy, so I'm not going to ask that one now, but I would love to know if you have some different tips. I know you have things in the book, but for anybody who's listening and just needs a couple of ideas or they're thinking, you know, I would love to get my hands on this book, but right now I just need some tips because I have some students with autism or I'm supporting students that have multiple disabilities in my classroom. What are some things that you might suggest to them?
This is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, but even if you do not have access to make visual supports with the programs, there are several programs out there. I have used drawings on paper so many times just to write out a schedule. Students with autism specifically typically are very rigid with their schedule and they want to know this is happening, here's next, this is next, this is next. They kind of want to check off their day as they go. You can write it on paper. It does not have to be fancy. You can put it on a dry erase board. You can have them draw pictures that represent the schedule. But that's a big deal for kids with autism. Another is repeating directions. So a lot of times, and this actually goes really well for kids with ADHD too. I have ADHD, but I was not diagnosed when I was in school. And my short-term memory is terrible. It's really poor. But I have learned strategies that help support that. I carry notepads with me because if I don't write it down, it's probably not going to happen. Or I might remember in like 6 or 7 days when I'm trying to go to sleep. So having things written down, schedule, directions. If you can represent directions in pictures or have peer buddies that are reminding each other of what the directions are. I'm trying to think if there's anything else really quick. Most teachers have like star boards or smart boards now where they can project onto the screen. You can put timers on there. Timers are a big deal so that kids know how much time they have left and providing verbal warnings. There are a lot of like little tiny things like that you can do to help kids that have structure needs stay on track.
Yeah. And the thing that I like about that too, is I often, we think that it has to be some big undertaking, right? We need some form of technology, or just going to be all this time creating all these materials. And sometimes it is just the slightest thing. And you might not even think about like what, like classroom screen has, like in my room, I used that a couple of years ago, I think. And students would often say, you know, how much time is left or how much should I do or whatever, just having that space where whatever information they need, because you can put a bunch of different things on it. So each mm-hmm. student is getting what information that they need so they can kind of work through. If they're counting down to the class period ends, then that's whatever the case may be. But I like those easy strategies that, like you said, grab a piece of paper or create it. I mean, the cardstock is awesome, but if you're, you know, time, just quickly grabbing mm-hmm. something. But it sounds like these strategies are something that, I mean, all students need, right? Even if they haven't been identified in having a special need, these are things that all of our students need to develop.
Absolutely. And earlier I mentioned universal design for learning, and that's really, I'm not 100% well-versed in UDL, but I'm learning more and more. And visual supports are one of the big tier one universal design strategies, because it's good for all students. And I mean, there's so many strategies that teachers use that they don't even think about that are meeting those students' needs. So I like to say good teaching is good teaching. Good strategies are good strategies. It's not just for your kids with special needs. It's really good for everyone. And if we think about all of the visuals we use as adults, I mean, think about the timers on your iPhone. I have the notes list. I have the bullet list. Like, I have little things all over my phone that help me stay on track, keep organized, know when it's time to move on. And we don't really count that against ourselves as having to have visuals to be an independent person. And so I think we should give that same benefit to our kids.
Yeah. And the one thing that you said too, and I'm shaking my head as you were saying it, is so often I do find, and I have found in my experience or just in speaking with other educators, that there are these things that we hear of. And like one example I'll say is like SEL. And I've told this story so many times at different settings that years ago, somebody had said to me, "What are you doing in your classroom for SEL?" And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" Because when they said it, I didn't have a clue as to what it was at the time. And so they gave me a couple of examples, and I was doing some of those things. And then I thought, I need to learn more about this. And so I Googled it, and then I learned, oh, okay, so I need to be a little bit better about it. And other similar things too. Like sometimes we are already doing things, but we don't realize it. We've just naturally mm-hmm. figured out that we need to do those things, not because like, oh, hey, here's UDL and dive in. And like you, UDL was something newer to me. So I've been reading on it and learning more about it. But so sometimes I think educators get a little bit scared. I know, especially in some of the different conferences I've been at where teachers have said, you know, we're looking to implement this full curriculum on this topic and we don't have the time to do it. I'm like, but you've already been doing it. It's just, it wasn't identified like, oh, we're starting this today. It's already been part of your practice. You just, yeah. It came to you naturally, I guess. And like you said, good teaching is good teaching. And yeah. Did you want to add something to that?
Well, something that I was telling a group of teachers either last week or the week before, I was hosting a training. You don't have to have every single component of UDL in every single lesson that you do. And there are a lot. I mean, if you've looked into UDL, it's a lengthy list once you break down all three core components and then look down into the details of each one. That would take a ton of time and a lot of work, but start with a few and keep adding. You can't do everything in one day. That's going to overwhelm everyone and you're going to shut down. But start small and keep growing.
Right. That is the biggest takeaway from the last couple of years, especially with all of the changes and all the technology and all the things happening. It's like, where do you begin? Well, you just identify one area where maybe you need some assistance or you want to change things up a little bit. Like I say, what is taking up most of your time or taking time away from students? Or, you know, for me years ago, it was like, there was a disconnect. Students needed my help in either I was teaching when they were available, or we had meetings after school. So I found a messaging app, and then I started to slowly build out and add different tools in, not everything all at once, because that does lead to overwhelm. And so, so thanks for sharing that as well. And something else that I wanted to ask you too. So we have this great resource with everything that educators need already for you in the back of the book, tons of pages. And obviously you are an advocate for, you know, individuals with special needs. And that's something for me, probably 5 years ago, I was at an EdCamp conference, and, you know, I really hadn't had a lot of courses in special education, because when I got my undergraduate degree, that wasn't part of the requirement. And so when I went back and got my master's degree several years ago, I think I had to take 5 different courses. And I couldn't believe how much I didn't know. And, you know, I knew just enough, but I got a new appreciation for the work that people with special education do. I had to write an IEP, just all of the different things that we go through. But it led me to write a blog about why all educators need to understand, like, all of these different components and what an IEP is and what goes into it. And I mean, the list goes on and on. And so I was kind of, you know, advocating for, like, we need this training in our schools. And so for anybody who's thinking, oh yeah, you know, I feel that same way, you know, how would you suggest, or what are your recommendations for how all of us as educators can advocate to have better resources and better support provided in our schools for students that have special needs?
Well, I do not think that you are alone in not having in your undergrad those classes. Most people only get like one class about special education, and it's not enough. With the number of kids that are in classrooms now, even with just ADHD, not considering any other students, you need to have strategies for those kids. And they're not teaching the majority of our teachers how to do those things. So yes, and I don't know how to fix that, but there has to be a way, and I'm going to think about it. But for in the school setting, ask your administrators. Administrators are always getting emails about this training and that training, things that they have in the local special ed cooperative. I know in Arkansas, the state is broken up into co-ops, and they offer trainings all throughout the year over different topics. And so I don't know if it's like that. It's probably not like that in every state. But if you are looking for training for special education, you can find it. And you can usually find it at a reasonable price. You know, if you're going to a big conference, it may cost a little bit more, but schools have professional learning funds for those kind of things. You can have someone brought in. I mean, I really think having a team talking about it, a lot of schools have behavior teams now. And what are you missing? What do you see a lot of your kids coming in? What do you feel like you really need to learn as a staff? And then find someone that can hit all of those components. They can come to a staff meeting. Everyone has professional learning days. There are a lot of different ways that you can find training on that. And right now, after COVID, you can find almost anything online to watch that's been recorded. I mean, yeah it's a lot.
Thankful for technology and the fresh professional learning component too. I know for years that it was always in person. We didn't have the technology. Mm-hmm. And then it started to be, you know, there were conferences and all of these different things. And I think the mindset around PD has wavered, you know, good and bad and everything in between. I love PD. I love going to conferences and learning and then coming back all excited about what I've learned. And then also kind of thinking, goodness, I have a lot more to learn in certain areas. But the thing about it is, you know, you can, because there's, you can access webinars, there's podcasts, mm-hmm. you can listen to blogs, it can fit on your schedule. And, you know, it's simple things like that too, where it doesn't mean that you need to necessarily go and sit down for an 8-hour PD mm-hmm. on one thing one day. It's just little bits and pieces, or just even engaging in some activity and then, you know, having a conversation with colleagues in your school, which I know finding the time to do that is tough, but couple quick minutes just to share ideas and stuff. And that really does go a long way, because I know that it helped me having the support when I was taking those classes to understand all that went into doing things like writing an IEP and mm-hmm. just so many considerations. It was, I was thankful to have those courses to take, but also kind of like, why didn't we have this before? Because this is not something, it's not a new area. And so, but again, I went to undergrad a while ago, so we're not going to talk about that. But in talking about learning, as we start to wind down, and I love learning about new things and the inspiration behind the work that people do, like writing a book, starting companies and organizations and creating resources. So the work that you do and the work with Maven, how does Maven provide support to educators and to the families of children that do have special needs?
Right now, I'm fairly new. This is month six for the company. And primarily, I'm out in schools supporting teachers in person, coaching those evidence-based strategies. My goal for the future is to start offering parent trainings and virtual, in person, whatever people need, you know, send out some surveys and try to find out what people are interested in. But parents a lot of times need support and they really don't know where to go to get it. If you're getting ABA services, most insurance companies require it. So you might get a little bit here and there, but if you just have a student in a special education classroom in a school, you may or may not ever run into any kind of professional learning type situation that you can learn better how to support your child in the home. So that's one of the things that I want to get going, probably virtually at first. And I'm also, I have a lot of things I want to do. I'm looking at possibly doing something with transition for special needs kids that are graduating from high school, supporting learning job skills, how to interview, all of those types of things. I just, every day I have something new. I'm like, oh, I really want to do that too. But, you know, I'm going to have to pick something specific one of these days.
Yes, but it's good to have ideas. And like you, I have a lot of notebooks and post-its and notepads and everything's everywhere, all those things everywhere. And so you just stick them on the wall and you get to them at some point in time. But it's better to have, I guess, a ton of ideas that are worth exploring than to just be stuck on only one. But that's awesome. And so congratulations on the new company early on there. It was 6 months. It's super exciting. And yet something else to occupy and make it a not typical day, every day for you.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, for people that want to learn more about your new company, where would they find information or what's the best way to check out what you offer?
I have a website. It's mavenlearninginnovations.com. And I also have a Facebook page and an Instagram page that have the same name. And that's where you're going to find most of the information. I'd say the website's is built up pretty well. It's not published yet, but I'm working on a section just for parent resources. So parents could have a place to come and look for some of the websites or trainings that I can link there that I found really useful. So they aren't digging and looking for something that they're not sure about. So that's coming.
All right. So I will make sure that I put the link in the show notes to all those things. And is your book available via your website as well?
It is not. It is not on my website. It is on a lot of different places. I know it's on Amazon. Okay. I saw it on, I've seen it on several places, but the publisher obviously is selling it. It's New Leaf Publishing Group. They have many of copies.
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure that when I say we, I mean me, myself, and I don't really have a team, but it sounds better to say, we'll make sure
together,
you and I, we will make sure everybody thinks that we have all of these. I mean, you doing all the pages and the website and all of that. I mean, it's people all often think that it like you have a team. It's just me. And I have a good workflow, so trying to maintain it, but I will make sure that I have all the links in there. And before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to share that we didn't get a chance to talk about? Anything else you'd like people to know? Any last words? no pressure whatsoever, but I always like to ask my guests that question.
A quick little note that we did not get to talk about was advocacy. Couple of quick tips on advocating for your child. Build a relationship with the team, the teacher. Have open communication. If you're finding things that are working at home, share that with the school team. And ask them to do the same. If they're finding things that are working at school, you want to know about that so you can do that, you know, at home. Learn your rights. They have to give you a parent rights packet at every meeting. Read through those and learn what your rights are so that if something comes along and you're like, I don't really agree with that, you know where you stand based on your rights. That's just a couple of really quick tips, but there are also many free advocacy organizations around everywhere. So if you're feeling like you need some extra support, you could always look into that.
Well, those were great tips. And I do, the one that really helps me is whenever the family tells me that this is what we do at home and this is what works at home, because then I can provide that same support in my classroom. Because in years past, you know, I was trying all these different things. And while, you know, obviously it's important to communicate with families, but sometimes you may not necessarily think, I mean, as a parent, you might not think that that could be something that might actually work in the classroom because of all the other students or something. I've had parents say like, well, I didn't think that would work there. I'm like, it worked perfectly. Like, thanks for sharing that. And it does make a difference because we do want to support them both at home and in school. So, well, Jenny, thank you for joining me today. It's been nice to have somebody to chat with on this lovely episode.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, of course. And for everybody who's listening, check out all the links that I'll share about Jenny's work, where you can contact her and learn more and get resources, and also check out the book. And we will catch you the next time. So thanks for listening.